Reading from Jivadharma, chapter 8, Vaishnav behavior. Okay, one second. I need to find this section. Om Vijnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shilakaya Saksu Vimrutam Yena Prismai Si Guruvena Si Chaitanya Manobhisham Tapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Vidati Sapadantikam Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindubhayabhacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from Govardhan, just a wonderful place. And you really can really see the difference between spiritual and material perception. Because as you enter deeper into a holy place like Govardhan, by performing, chanting and hearing, basically it's all day. I mean, I'm up early in the morning and even now it's 5:30, I've been up for more than 4 hours, and then generally this time I go half around Govardhan and get back, and then there's such songs. And, you know, perception is dependent on attention, for one thing. But it's also dependent on, perception is dependent on attention, it's dependent on conception, and it's dependent on attitude. If you're envious, you can't see. So it's just not the sight. It's the conception you have and the heart. And somehow or other, the spiritual perception, you perceive not just a visual, but a feeling of devotion and love that's so prominent here. But my perception changes every day as we go deeper and deeper and just chanting and hearing all day long. So it's quite an edifying experience, and almost like I feel like I don't want to leave this place and I don't want to leave this type of life and how to carry this life on further. To keep this level of spiritual practice alive. So we're in a very interesting discussion, as we know. The theme of Jivadharma is Nitya Dharma, Jivadharma. What is the duty of the soul? What is the soul made for? What is the soul made of? What is it made of? God. It's God's energy. And the energy is to serve its source. We are conscious instruments, conscious parts. And the part is meant to serve the whole. And real service is love. In the ultimate reality, we're parts made for love of the ultimate reality. And that's bhakti. And love means to guide your life by the direction and will of your beloved. So we're conscious instruments that need to seek out a will beyond our separate interests. And that's bhakti. Bhakti means beyond separate interests. It's the interest of something else, and the highest love is love of Godhead. It's the interest of the totality of existence, which is the divine, which is Krishna. So Jiva Dharma is showing what a life based on that conception is, based on that the ultimate and real conception of who you are. And now, what is the behavior, Vaishnava behavior and Nityananda? When you realize that platform, then how do you behave? And of course, as all Jiva Dharma, it's taking place in the venue or the setting of an island in Navadvip called Godra, which is very pastoral, and where there are great saints living in different communities, and they somehow are gathered at one place in Nityananda Ghatan. Machita Matkata Prana Bodhiantas Paraspuram. This is what saintly people do. They meet together and they discuss. The satsangs here, at least I go to the one at 12:30 to 2. We're just reading Anchalila 4. And mostly we're reading, and then there's a discussion. But it's a community, because that association, people are not trying to establish their own learning. Or generally when we enter a group, we enter it for our own agenda. But it's an agenda of pleasing all the Vaishnavas and glorifying God. It's very wonderful, and wonderful discussions do ensue. So this is what Vaishnav society does. And one person asks, you know, about the behavior of Vaishnava, and the discussion has been that, you know, the real behavior of a Vaishnava is when they come to a certain level of understanding and practice called Madhyamadhikari. And that's what we should aspire for, where we have a proper conception and understanding and mood, and therefore we worship God and Guru. We make friends with the Vaishnavas. We show compassion to other people. And we avoid those who are inimical to our conceptions, at least in intimate dealings about life's purpose. So these three categories are being discussed very, very in depth, because there's an intelligent man and there are intelligent teachers and there is dialogue to actually reveal it. So we're up to one part, and just, you know, they're really trying to hone in more deeply on what's the distinction between these three levels of Kanishtha, Madhyam, and Uttam. And very interesting point, he said that the Kanishtha, its primary characteristic is that he has belief in God and worships God in the form of the deity. But self-purification, really internal self-purification based on chanting, hearing, becomes secondary. And you can see, even in temples, there's some people that just come and see the deity. Without a depth of understanding, without a depth of purification. But they have that kind of belief and they become attached. But they don't really have bhakti yet. They're kind of eligible for bhakti, but they don't really have bhakti. Because real bhakti is when your motives are not karma, fruitive, in your worship, or jnana, salvation in your worship. And when you have the concept of ananya bhakti, that the purpose of life is not to develop the separate interest, but to serve the interest of God, which is kind of an interest of an ultimate reality of God exchanging with his energies, and basically it's an exchange of love. That's what ultimately exists. It's a beautiful concept. What ultimately exists is an exchange of love that we are meant to participate in. So, see, one of the symptoms is when you start to come to this symptom of Madhyam, you could, you know the difference between just guests and Vaishnavas. And you develop a real ruchi, let me serve the Vaishnavas, not just let me hang out with my friends and my family. But you develop a real special ruchi of taste for serving the Vaishnavas. So, you know, then naturally this person asks, well, how long does it take to get that, you know, that that really deep understanding? And you can see it. A person comes to the deity and he offers something to the deity with food and intention. And another person understands that you come to the deity to please the deity. It's a conception. Maybe based on some experience, but it's a conception and understanding. That's what we got from Prabhupada. That's what you get in Guru Parampara. That's what changes your mind. It's a conception. So he says, well, how long does it take? And it depends from your past bhakti sukriti. Your past association with devotees and taste for that. Of course, Prabhupada said no one can come to Krishna consciousness without previous connection. That's what he's referring to here. But even if one has no previous connection, by the mercy of a devotee. But generally, it's a cumulative thing. And the more you accumulate that sukriti, then the quicker the depth of this understanding comes. He says, what is the result of the first result of this sukriti? One attains, he said, the Babaji says, one attains sadhu sangha. one attains sadhu sangha. So that's the gift of contact with devotional activities, the gift of serving the Vaishnavas and the pious credits that accrue from serving the Vaishnavas is you can attain sadhu sangha. So then this Nityananda asks, well, what is the progression that evolves from sadhu sangha? Okay, now, and he quotes his famous verse from the third canto, Satam Kasangham Mama Virya Sampado Bhavanti Ritkana Rasayana Kata. So basically what happens, as a result of the association, you get the opportunity to hear descriptions of Krishna, which are like nectar and tonic for the ears. And then by hearing them, you get this shraddha, this faith, this attraction, and then it builds up to rati or bhava and frame, and one becomes completely pure. And then he says, he asks, well, how do you attain this sadhu sangha? And the Babaji replies, he already explained it by Sukriti in previous verse. And now he'll give a verse from the Bhagavatam 10:51-53 to actually demonstrate that. Bhavapavargo brahmato yudhavavage. The jiva has been wandering in the circle of birth and death since time of beginning. And when the time for his release from this cycle approaches, he attains satsanga. From that moment, he becomes attached to you as a supreme goal of attainment. So this Nityananda Das, still in question, he said, is it only by sadhu sangha that a kanishtha, a beginning person, awakens inclination for worshiping the devotees? So how can it be said that he doesn't render any service to the sadhus? In other words, it's by sadhu sangha, you get the kanishtha, you get the belief in God. Then how can you say that he doesn't render any service to the sadhus? Which is a very good question. By sadhu, by sadhu sangha, the kanishtha gets the inclination for the deity. So the Babaji says, well, by good fortune one obtains sadhu sangha, by good fortune, and you get the belief in the deity. Nonetheless, worship of the deity must be accompanied by service to the sadhus themselves. Until this type of faith develops, one's shraddha is incomplete and one remains ineligible for ananya bhakti. It's something with an expanse of devotion where it requires to serve the sadhus. Where relationship to the deity, if it's just exclusively to the deity, there may be a sense of possessiveness that doesn't actually challenge one's humility. The real deep, deep conception of bhakti that is the deep conception of bhakti is humility, that I'm infinitesimal and God is infinite. And I'm meant for God's service. I'm completely dependent on God. Somehow that doesn't awaken until one actually appreciates. You can see it so clearly. Someone who just worships the deity and doesn't have respect for the Vaishnavas and doesn't serve the devotees, his heart is not very, very pure. He's a beginner. But somehow or other, the worship of the deity has to be accompanied by the service to the Vaishnavas. And then Nityananda says, well, one of the stages of progress for Kanishtha Bhakta. And he explains that he worships the deity with faith. He's not yet freed from karma again. And then by chance, some guests come who happen to be devotees, and he serves them. And by observing their activities, and he gets to hear a chance of spiritual topics, and this way he develops great respect for the character of the bhakti. So, Kanishtha, okay, he's worshiping the deity, but when the devotees come, and he doesn't make a distinction between devotees and ordinary guests, but he begins to serve them nonetheless, like a cultured person would serve any guest, and then he gets a chance to observe their behavior and hear their discussions. And seeing, again, I make this point, what a Vaishnava is the goodness in our heart that we appreciate but don't understand deeply becomes exemplified before our eyes so that we're able to see the beauty of it. And then, as Babaji explained, by that you become aware of your own defects. And then you begin to appreciate and follow that behavior and you rectify your own behavior. And eventually, the root of all anarthas, they get into karma and jnana. They begin to fade. And when your heart becomes purified, you become free from any selfish motive. Either the desire for control, the desire for salvation. And gradually by this process, the Kanishtha becomes free from any extraneous desires. And then he studies the Shastra and begins to hear the narrations and pastimes and the truths about Krishna. And his understanding becomes firm and he accepts, fully understands the transcendental nature of Krishna, of the holy name. And the Angas of Bhakti, and when it matures, this understanding and this depth and this understanding, he comes to the stage of Madhyam Bhakta. And when he comes to that stage and that discrimination becomes clear, he really understands now how to behave. And he begins to serve and associate with the Vaishnavas, and he begins to preach and enlighten people who don't have, and he begins to avoid the intimacy of heart, with at least in spiritual context, with those who don't have a favorable inclination towards Krishna. So then the Nityananda says, well, why don't the Kanishthas progress? Babaji said, well, if the Kanishtha associates mainly with people who are inimical, his immature level of eligibility for bhakti quickly fades, and his eligibility for karma and jnana become prominent. In some cases, the bhakti does not become more or less eligible, but remains exactly on the same level. Well, when does this happen, Nityananda said, Babaji said, when he associates equally with bhaktis and inimical people. These are Kanishtha. The beginning stage comes to Madhyam. His community changes. His intimate friends change. And if it doesn't, you stay where you are. And And if you're not, under what circumstance can advancement be assured? And Babaji, his advancement is rapid when he associates with bhaktis, and that becomes prominent. Babaji, in the preliminary stage, his inclination to sinful and pious activities would be like the karmis and gyanis, as Babaji says. But as he progresses, these propensities will be displeased, and his inclination to please Sri Hari will become prominent. What a beautiful section of how to come to a higher level. Nityananda Das, dear Master, I've understood the situation of Kanishtha Adhikaris. Now, kindly describe the primary symptoms of the Madhyam Adhikari Bhaktis. Now, again, he's going to describe when you actually come to the real platform of Vaishnava, which is Madhyam Adhikari. You have a depth of conception, you're attached to the processes of purification, you're beginning to associate more with the devotees. Babaji, the Madhyam Bhakta has Ananya Bhakta towards Krishna. So he has that desire to please Krishna. That's the main thing in bhakti, the desire to please Krishna. That's our eternal relationship with Krishna. That's our natural relationship is with God. You're naturally connected to God. It's like we have family and we have people that are not family. So there's a natural relation and people have, you know, romantic partners and people are not. These are relationships. And, you know, whatever they're based on the body, based on attraction. But there's a relationship that's based on ontology or being, and that's our relationship with God. And it's the most natural love, just like the natural love of the mother to child, it's our most natural love. And so he has the Ananya Bhakti towards Krishna, and his friendship with the Bhaktas consists of four attitudes. He considers the Bhaktas to be more dear than himself. He feels intimate affection towards them. He considers them as worshipable, and he considers them as a place of pilgrimage. Yatma Buddhi Kunute Bhaktiki Sadhikala Tadishi Ijibomadi. One who considers the his body to be the source of the body is that which is dear. Who considers the intimate affection. Wish I can find this verse. One second. I just want to, one second. I'm going to look this up. I want to look something up and then share it with you. Your self-identification is the body. It says identify with the body. You consider the family as your own, who your worshipable objects is your land of birth, but you never develop that relationship with the devotees, then it's useless. Anyway, the Madhyam Bhakta also bestows mercy on those who are ignorant of spiritual truth, and he neglects the inimical. These are primary characteristics of the Madhyam Bhakta. When one develops Sambandha Gyan, again, a deep depth conception, practices sadhana, you really want to be purified and develop pure devotion, which is the means, then you get the goal of prema, and that's the goal of life. And this is the methodology of the Madhyam, he explains. And it's generally observed when the Madhyam Bhakta performs Harinam and other activities, the association of bhaktas, they do so without committing offense. So that's the primary thing. And what are the secondary symptoms of the Madhyam? And Babaji said the secondary symptoms is the way he lives his life. His life is completely surrendered to the will of Krishna and is favorable to bhakti. So his primary characteristics is he's worshiping God. He's associated. And the second, his whole life is dedicated to God. Nityananda, can he still commit sin or offenses? Babaji, some tendency to commit sins or offenses may appear in the beginning stage, but gradually these will disappear. Whatever sins or offenses are still present at the beginning of the Madhyam stage are like chickpeas that are just about to be ground to pulp. They are still seen as small lumps. Within a few moments, they will be crushed and will cease to exist. Nitya Vairagya, appropriate renunciations of life and soul of the Madhyam. So it's great, like chickpeas, especially when they're cooked and yet they're about to be ground to a pulp. And when you smash them, you'll still see small lumps. But in a few minutes, those lumps will cease to exist. So he said the tendency to commit sin at the beginning, but it's just, you know, in the process of being eliminated. Because he has yipta vairagya. He's renouncing things that are not connected to Krishna because of his love for Krishna. He has that spiritual goal. That spiritual goal is in his heart, and naturally you have that spiritual goal. And you're tasting that spiritual goal, then you want to give up things that have no relationship to that. Does the Madhyam Bhakta have any trace of karma gyan or extraneous desires? Well, Bobby, in the initial stage, there's a trace of these things, but they'll be uprooted. Whatever vestiges of karma gyan remain, at the beginning, manifests occasionally, but gradually they fade into oblivion. This is a very, very powerful. Nityananda, does the bhaktas even desire to live? And so why? Actually, they have no desire to live or die or attain liberation. They desire to live only to attain consummation of their bhajna. A purpose to live. Why are we living? Because this body and life affords us an opportunity to practice Krishna consciousness and actually attain that goal which actually has value or worth. Nityananda, but why don't they long for death? What happiness can come from remaining in this gross material body? When they die, will they not attain their spiritual forms and identities by Krishna's mercy? Babaji, they have no independent desires. All their desires are solely dependent on Krishna's will because they are firmly convinced that everything is happening by his will and that whatever happens is only because of his desire. They have, therefore, no desire to aspire for anything independently. They have no desire to live. They have no desire to die, attain liberation. They don't care about liberation. All they want is service to Krishna. That's the symptom of a pure devotee. Okay, I have to go because I'm going to go out on foot on the Govardhan, and I give the class, and I start a little bit later today. But I wouldn't mind hearing anybody like to say hello, or if anybody has one or two questions I can answer.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Malati.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Malati, Hare Krishna. I just heard from a friend of mine that one of the best kirtaneers moved to Delaware, with that little center there.
Yes, I heard. I just visited there. Yeah, they're very excited.
Is that person there doing kirtan?
No, they're not here yet.
I really
Okay, good. Looking forward to it.
Okay, nice to hear from you, Malati. Okay.
Thank you for class.
Hi, Krishna. Thank you. Thank you for being on. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Yeah, Hare Krishna. Good. 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 Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Bajrani Devdasi.
Bajrani, Hare Krishna. Good. Thank you.
Thanks for the class, Maharaj.
Okay. I guess thank you for attending the class. Okay, I have to go to Govardhan now. Thank you all. Hare Krishna.